This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV's coverage of Amazon's The Wheel of Time. So this is our instant reaction talk about episode 7, titled The Dark Along the Ways. So if you're new to the channel, our instant reactions, we try to keep them as instant-y and reaction-y as we can, try to take down some big topics, talk fairly generally about them. Obviously, we're going to have questions. We love the show, so we're going to get into some nitty-gritty stuff. We always end up repeating ourselves on the deep dives, but we're going to try to keep this as short and sweet as possible. If you aren't new, you'll notice that we're down a couple members. And if you're, I guess if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it now. But if you're listening, you'll be able to hear it in a few. But so Luke and Paul are not here, not joining us on this episode. But we've picked up a hell of a free agent.
Hey!
In B Toms. So say hello to the people.
Happy to be here. Yeah. Hi to the people. My name's Brian, and I have been following along with the podcast, with the show since it started. Kyle's obviously been hyping it up for the whole group, but I have been enjoying it immensely. You know, it's really been touted as the heir to Game of Thrones. There's been this fantasy vacuum that needs to be filled by somebody, and this kind of seems like a worthy person to take that mantle, a worthy show to take over that mantle. So it's really exciting to be in on the ground floor in season one, and season one has been really, really strong so far. I've enjoyed the entire mystery around who the Dragon Reborn is. That's been the main plot line, and by the way, this is the episode where we get the reveal. So what a great episode for me to have my first appearance on the podcast. I don't want to get into all the theories that I've had because there's been quite a few, but the biggest one in my head is Rand's dad. Okay. When he whips out the sword and just sauces up the Trolloc in episode one real quick, which might still be the most badass sequence in this entire show, because that's a middle-aged man. He knows the way of the sword, clearly. When he unsheaths it and we see the heron, it's a heron, right?
Yep.
And we see the heron like near the hilt. That has to be some White Lotus stuff, like from Avatar The Last Airbender, Uncle Iroh. And there just has to be this band of awesome old people that are well-traveled, just know their shit and can handle themselves with a sword or weapon, whatever. That's what I'm going with. That's the Order of the Heron. And that's what he's got.
Tom Maryland falls into that category, right, B-Toms?
Tom Maryland might fall into that category. I've been listening to the coverage. So I definitely, when you started connecting the dots that he might be one of the Forsaken, I don't think he's going to wind up being a Shamael. That would be crazy. But I think Tom Maryland could definitely be one of the Forsaken. And one of the things that I was questioning is, can the Forsaken be around long enough that they're able to pry themselves away from the Dark One and become like good guys? Because it seems like we don't know anything about Tom Maryland, but certainly it didn't seem like he was evil.
There's a very famous line in the books. It's essentially, and I literally just listened to it because I'm doing a reread of book two. And it's basically that there's no man, or there, you can't stay in the shadow long enough to not be able to come back to the light. So it is kind of canonically a thing that you're never too far into the shadow.
Ooh.
Like that.
I like that. That's canon. Yeah, definitely.
Give some hope for Matt never being a bad guy, fully hopefully being a bad guy. You know, there's always chance for redemption if that's the case.
So like B-Tom said, the biggest mystery of the season obviously has been who is the Dragon Reborn. Like he also said, we get the reveal this episode that it's none other than Rand Althor.
So wow.
Someone that no one on the podcast has guessed. My mother is the only person I know that I think I know that has said it. There's probably some people in my life that are maybe listening to this, like shaking their fist at the air, like I'm forgetting about them. But I'm pretty sure my mom is the only one that really guessed it. So she's actually been a Rand OG since day one. And I know you guys have kind of probably flip-flopped over the course of this season. So I'm just curious of how we're dealing with Rand now being the Dragon Reborn.
I love it, man. I love it. I mean, I was on the ride or die hill train for Nynaeve, but I always iterated saying that, you know, I've never had a problem with whoever it was going to be. You know, if it was going to be Perrin, Matt, I think any one of them would be a great Dragon Reborn character to follow. And the same goes for Rand. I'm absolutely stoked that it was him. I thought early, like, on it was going to be him because it was the MC, but then I was like, ah, that's a little too obvious. Then I was on the Nynaeve train for a while, and episode 4 really made me feel like it was Nynaeve. And then they brought it back to it being Rand, and they alluded to it throughout the season, and I just couldn't believe that. I just couldn't put it together, and it was still an amazing reveal that even though he did feel like the MC almost, that he was the Dragon Reborn, it still felt like a really good twist. And especially how we saw him, you know, breaking down the door that was only supposed to be broken down by 3 men. We never really got that explained. We talked about it on the podcast, and we were just like, how the fuck did he do that? And we were just like, he just did it, you know. Maybe he has superhuman strength, but now it makes a lot of sense. Let's go. Rand for the Dragon Reborn. I'm all in. His character development is going to be crazy.
Yeah, I'm thrilled with it. Honestly, my gut was telling me, just like Dave said, I was getting MC vibes from Rand since the beginning of the series. Like, they were kind of grooming him. And then when I finally, Kyle, I sent you before I watched the episode, here's my final list of who I think the Dragon Reborn is going to be. Matt was at the top. I think Rand was 4th. And admittedly, I was just like, Emma, here's my list. I'm going to send Kyle. She was just like, oh, the typical white guys at the top. Because I went, yeah, another white main character. Are you kidding me? Like, white male main character. Because I had Matt and Rand. And I was just like, yeah, you're not wrong. So I put Rand down to 4. That just goes to show how good a job they did at keeping the mystery alive. Because all of us were clueless. People that have been dissecting this podcast, 0-for-4 of who... Or I guess 0-for-2, because it was only you and Paul. Luke has read the books. Yeah. I'm happy that it was Rand. We ride.
Yeah, I'm happy that you're happy. It was definitely something that I was a little nervous about, because it's not a mystery in the books. It's fairly obvious that Rand is the guy from the get-go. So just, I guess, to give us a quick rundown, Rand has a little bit of kind of like a slideshow of everything that's happened up until this point. That was why he was leaning in his head towards thinking he was the one, and the hints that they were purposely dropping. So like Dave said, the door that he breaks down was the first hint, but they did it well in that it gets overshadowed immediately by the chase and the Dark Friend reveal. So you're not even really thinking about it at that point. Then the Dragon Mount line, when he looks at the mountain and says that thing looks familiar. And then, saving Egwene, or I'm sorry, Egwene, Jesus, in the ways they do end up showing that he channeled Tam's, the fever dream, when he's bringing Tam from, like B-Tom's mentioned in the first episode, the Trolloc fight, and he's bringing him back to the village. And Tam is kind of having this, a little bit of a fever dream. He's just like saying things about how he found a baby and all this stuff. And Rand's kind of like, the fuck's going on? So that's actually the first seed of doubt that gets sown in his mind. Something they don't bring up is that Rand, when he's in the library, when we first meet Loial, is reading that book. That's the Corinthian cycle, which is the prophecies of the dragon. So obviously, if you're not a book reader, you don't know what the cycle is. But that was a nice little nod where he's the one that first name drops it and is reading it. So I'm just glad that people were okay with it, because I was a little nervous, to be honest, that, yeah, the reaction was going to be, of course, it's the MC vanilla white guy.
From your perspective, Kyle, as a book reader who saw this coming, who knew it was going to be Rand, how do you think the show did in portraying him as... If like you were wiped clean of the books, like, do you think it would have been tough for you to decide to as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. I probably would have been on the Nynaeve train, especially after episode 4.
Yeah, that's what I really kept harping on, that, and that was where my answer came from.
But yeah, but I think honestly every episode since then has lowered her probability of it. Yes. So like the whole conversation of how her age being a thing was basically the main point.
Main reason, yeah.
Is that she just couldn't be it because she was too old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the logic behind me thinking Matt was going to be the Dragon Reborn was the fact that, one, it's prophesized to be a little bit ambiguous whether or not they're going to be good or bad. And Matt is the most morally compromised character, but he is also a good family man. You know, he took care of his sisters. So they've established that he has the good and the bad, and that's Dragon Reborn. But also, I was going through the list and kind of just like placing all the other characters. Our two girls, Egwene and Nynaeve, they are both already established as the most powerful Aes Sedai in the past 1,000 years, if they want to pursue that. So they're already special. You got Perrin. He's a werewolf. He's special for a different reason other than being the Dragon Reborn. And you have Rand, who knocked down the door, which we now know is because he was the Dragon Reborn. But that aside, he could have just been he could have been Egwene's warder, who could also channel and has the strength of 4 men, and he would be the best warder in the history of wardership. And that would have left Matt, who would have slotted in nicely as the Dragon Reborn, who doesn't really fit the mold. You know, he isn't the cookie cutter protagonist because he is very flawed. And that would have been a very interesting way to take the series. But I'm sure it gives the writer a lot more freedom to pick the character that is Rand, who is just the perfect protagonist, fit the mold, you know.
I like your reasonings for why. I never really thought of it like that, with the ambiguity between good and evil within Matt, and that he didn't, because even on this podcast I would theorize options for all the other characters and I never really got to Matt and what I thought he was going to be. So I really like the logic that you had in thinking it's Matt. Honestly, if I hadn't seen this episode, just based off that, I would have been like, oh yeah, fuck Nynaeve, it's Matt, you know. Like, that makes sense.
I like that you're thinking along those lines of the moral ambiguity, and kind of they have been dropping those breadcrumbs a little bit of, is the dragon good? Is he bad? And I think it'll be interesting to look back as we see more seasons and go on this journey with these characters and think about the fact that Rand was the vanilla main character guy, and then see after basically every season checking in on what they all were like in season one. And it's going to be fun to look back at the development and see the way that they change. Just such a good ride. Rand has one of the best character arcs of any character I've watched, read, anything. So I think that if you have some reservations that it is Rand, they'll very quickly, I think, get washed away as we move forward.
I love to hear that. And something I want to talk about too is just this connection that all quote unquote five of these, you know, candidates have. We saw it in episode two, I believe it was, when they all have the dream, which I'm now curious. I wonder if Nynaeve had that dream with the crow coming out of the dead crow coming out of the mouth. So there's that connection that we also get in the beginning of this episode, or like middle of this episode, with the seer, who says, yes, there's a clear connection between all four of them. What is that connection going to mean for the rest of our group? Is Rand just going to be the main head of this five-headed Hydra Dragon Reborn, and the other four are still going to be support, or are they going to be important in other ways that maybe aren't around being the Dragon Reborn, or, you know, involving the Dragon Reborn? So just something I'm interested to look out for in the upcoming seasons and potentially next episode.
I think that the whole mystery of the dragon and who it ends up being is, it's like the prologue. I mean, it's really not the point of the story. Like, now it feels like we can actually get going. Like, we know who it is. We can leave that mystery behind, and everyone else can now, like, the things that happen to them, it doesn't have to be, oh, does that mean they're going to be the dragon? It's now they're kind of their own characters. And I'm really excited to see how people now begin to react as everyone branches off.
I do want to say, though, for the purposes of this series, or I guess a better way to say it is for the purposes of the TV adaptation, in order to capture the fan base, this was a great mystery, if only for the first half of the first season, to keep this mystery going. That was what I cared about finding out the most. But now that I'm seven episodes deep in the show, I've come to appreciate it for the show as a whole and not just care about that, of course. But that was something that could get someone hooked. That was a very good mystery to be following.
And they came at the right time, too. Like, if the Dragon Reborn, if we had to wait, like, you know, two seasons to find out who it was, you know, you might have lost some audience members in that gap. It's like, oh, they should have just told us at like the end of episode eight of season one. But right here at the seven, it gives us the reveal. And then at eight, it'll hopefully give us a little demonstration of what that means for Rand becoming the Dragon Reborn. And so I think it couldn't have come at a better time. And I really do like the idea that this is just the prologue. I'm sure that was a big question that could have been like for the whole entire series of the show, but getting it right here is a really good point in time, and it's only going to go up from here.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm glad that people are okay with the fact that it's Rand, which is good, because I mean, like I said, it really won't matter. Everyone has their own amazing storylines. So there's going to be something for everyone in any of these characters. So to move on, obviously we had to talk about the Dragon Reborn. So first, that's the heavy hitter of the episode. But the episode actually opens with an amazing scene, which is we get an Aiel woman, and she is just, there's no other way to say it. She's just kicking fucking ass in the snow while pregnant. My jaw was on the floor at this cold open. I think it's definitely my favorite of the entire season.
B-Times, I'm going to call you out because you just said Roose Bolton's fight in episode one was like, how did you describe it?
I said that was probably the most badass sequence of the series so far. I'd probably stay with that because I liked the stakes, and he wasn't a warrior at that point. He was a vet. He was an old man defending his homestead and his child.
We're talking about a pregnant woman defending her homeland and a child as well.
Hey man, you came at me. I was just trying to defend my argument, man.
Yeah. But for me, that like how you felt about that scene is how I felt for this scene. It was just, I don't think I've ever seen, honestly, in any TV shows or movie, a pregnant, like a 9-month pregnant, like about to give birth woman fuck up people who are like trained warriors as well, and just with such ease too. Well, maybe not with such ease, because she was clearly in pain from the contractions, but still at the end of the day, like she handled it so well. And then watching it with my roommate Alki was really funny, because he's the whole time, he's like, that's Rand's mom, that's Rand's mom, and it's like, that's Rand's dad. And like, it was just so funny. And I'm like, dude, I love the theories, because I honestly wasn't sure where this was going, and now that you said it, like, that's definitely what it is. But it's just a really epic scene to get into the reveal. Sorry, I was stuttering right there. The reveal of Rand becoming the Dragon Reborn. We get his awesome backstory. So I love that.
It also highlights just how badass the Aiel are as a people. It's already been told to us from Tom Marilyn, but now we see it. A 9-month pregnant woman, I mean, not to ruffle any feathers, you assume that men have more physical strength than a woman. And this pregnant woman takes on a small like garrison of troops. There were like a solid 6 or 7 people there, and she just like slices them up mid contraction. She like kills someone, and then she just like takes care of business on the next person. And I think our Dragon Reborn is going to put that bloodline or those genetics to good use. I think that's just going to solidify that he's going to be a badass with the sword or whatever weapon he picks up besides the arrow.
I love that too, because I agree. Like, I think he's going to be a badass warrior, but now we also know that the Dragon Reborn is also capable of being the strongest like magic user of all time. So not only is he going to be just a warrior, if he ever loses his ability to touch the One Power, like, he'll be fine. The dude can still wield a sword.
Spoiler-free comment. It's just kind of common sense at this point. Ran is just an absolute savage. Yep. It's gonna be so fun.
Dragon Reborn, baby.
I want to see some sword training, because we already seen his ability to use the bow. Like, he's already like, he can pick off, you know, bullseyes easily. So I want to see some sword training in there, Rand.
Know what's something I just thought of, Dave? You brought up that he's Dragon Reborn, supposed to be the most powerful channeler, whatever. All men who can channel are subject to the corruption. So, and I also think it was good foreshadowing the conversation between Matt and Rand when they were just like, if I ever get that way, kill me. You think they're referencing Matt because at the time he is under the corruption, but it seems like foreshadowing to when Rand will inevitably have to deal with the corruption. He's the DR, so he'll overcome it, of course, but like, I wonder how it affects the DR, if it's different than just a normal man, or if he's just going to be good enough to overcome it.
And even to go off that, I didn't even think about this either, is Rand is already the one of the group that is most questioning of the Aes Sedai, especially like the red ones. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now that he knows he's the Dragon Reborn and he knows he can channel, it's like, what is he going to do? What are you going to do? You know, is he going to stay at the White Tower? Is he going to be like, oh, this bit, like, you know, fucking Leanne, what's her name? Leandrin is going to fucking come for me. It's just, it was honestly a great build up for Rand to be the Dragon Reborn because of all these issues that he's experiencing. And looking back, it's easy for me to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense now, but just crazy.
It's just, I like that you guys are picking out all these potential conflicts, because, I mean, they have laid the groundwork for a lot of them.
I'm interested to also see Leandrin's perspective on finding out that the Dragon Reborn will be a guy. Like, I wonder if she's going to be on the train of, like, we got to just clean him now because he's going to go mad no matter what, or if it's because, like, if he's a Dragon Reborn, is he immune potentially to the madness?
Before we move on from the Blood Snow and kind of Rand's a little bit of his origin story, just want to shout out Tam Althor. Everyone else that is in his army is trying to kill this woman. He realizes what's happening and holds her hand through labor like a fucking savage. So just shout out to the goat. He's the dad of the year every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like how SpongeBob wins Employee of the Month of the Krusty Krab. Tam just wins dad of the year every year.
Yep.
So to take us back to another interesting concept that we get introduced to, but that we've kind of talked about a little bit, Luke loves this, and it's, I guess it's a little sad that he's not on the instant reaction, but he'll probably be on the deep dive to talk more about it. But the ways. So we have the Blood Snow as our opening cold scene, and then we get back to the main people, and we're inside the ways. So I'm just curious, what were we thinking about how the set looked? They do the Black Wind, which I thought was an interesting interpretation of it. The stakes for me felt very serious. I watched with my sister. She was freaking out, so I'm just curious how the two of you thought about it.
I think they did a really good job of raising the stakes quickly. And some people might have quarrels with, oh, they were able to get out of there so quick, though. But I think they did a good job of establishing that without the trump card that was Nynaeve to buy them, what was it, a solid 30 seconds for Moiraine to open the portal, they could have very well been screwed. I think they weren't able to press it very hard. Everybody only got one line of that inner monologue, but having someone take over your mind and implant voices, that's very invasive. That's disturbing, and that would be a bad situation. If they were in there for an extended period of time, I think they were showing us that they would have been screwed. So I think the stakes were raised. They got in. I thought it was a little gimmicky where they were just like, our waypoint is a day's walk away. What's the next closest one? Oh, it's two steps that way. Cool, let's go to that one. But like, and also that one just happened to be, the city that's one day's march away from where they need to go anyway. So why were they trying to go through the waypoint for a day's walk? Like, I don't know. I was getting away from my point. It was very good. I thought it was a good representation. And were either of you guys on Shadow and Bone?
No.
No. Okay. Well, there's a landmark in Shadow and Bone called the Void that it's very, very similar. Just this pitch black darkness that you can travel through. It connects.
Oh, I think they mentioned it, I think, in episode 6. So I think it was Luke and Paul who were on Shadow and Bone who were like, yeah, that's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, very similar concept, but it was cool. This one was a lot more safe than the Void was in Shadow and Bone, if that says anything about that. But it was very good, and I think the set design looked appropriate. I'm not a book reader, so I can't compare, but it looked pretty good.
I'm going to go off beat, Tom, and say I think the set looked amazing for it. It was also interesting, Loial talking about how it used to be. It sounded like he made it seem like it was like a field almost. Like it was just like open greenery, yeah. Like it was a beautiful place to be, and then something happened. And then now all of a sudden it's just completely black. You just end up falling for the rest of your life. You fall over the stones. It's just like, what an intense travel method. Like, yes, it has its benefits. Like it'll save you. It sounds like weeks of travel, but at the same time, like you could fucking, well, not die, but just eternity, just killing yourself basically.
Yeah. And, I mean, you would definitely, I feel like, just yeet yourself off of that bridge. I mean, if it's between just chilling inside the black wind or jumping into nothingness, I feel like eventually you would get to a point where you would just jump into nothingness.
Yeah. And then I really liked the black wind too. That was just really cool. B-Toms, it reminded me of Aeolith or Aeolith from Loki, the big cloud monster that just like swarms and just destroys anything.
Yeah.
But thought it was a really cool, interesting idea because it seemed like they were bugs, and I guess the bugs were kind of like whispering to them, and we get a lot of people's inner monologues in that moment. The only person we don't get is Loial, who I'm going to theorize now could potentially be a dark friend, because we know that they need to navigate through the ways, you need an Ogier or someone who can at least read the guide stones, and we've met Loial, and it just leads to the question of like, who was the person to lead the Trollocs through the waygates, or how, because that's how they determined that that's how they got to the two rivers. So someone had opened up the path for them to be able to travel through the ways. And it shows that maybe not all Ogiers are very gentle and kind. Maybe there's a little bit of logic and truth to what they're doing. You know, maybe there's some kind of Thanos plot behind the Ogiers. You know, the world is getting overpopulated. Let's cut out some of these people. Let's help with the Dark One, and then we'll reset the world into a place that, you know, a little bit more peace will come. Because they are very logical beings, it seems. And so it's an interesting theory that I came up with, but it's just something, because we saw one of the guide stones was also destroyed. So who did that? I don't know. Maybe Loial.
Loial is the Dark One, confirmed.
Yeah, Loial is the Dark One.
Yeah.
So I try to strike a nice balance of letting you guys theorize and then try to provide some supplemental information. But they do answer that question of how the Trollocs got through the way. So this is a good segue even to just adding Padan Fain into the discussion. So obviously he plays a little bit of an important role in this episode. Was definitely a big reveal that he is there and using the ways. So I guess they technically don't confirm it, but that's Lan theorizes that, like, okay, that's how the Trollocs got to the two rivers, is that Padan Fain was the person that led them through there.
Ugh. Just makes so much sense. Like, just with how he was acting in episode 1, and then we see him at, what's the new city? Faldara?
Yeah, Faldara.
Faldara, and Perrin makes that comment like, oh, that was Padan Fain, and he's like, no, it wasn't. Like, you're just crazy right now. But oh my god, if Padan Fain was such a likable character, like he was just a very charismatic guy, but that, like, Oh, that would just be devastating, to be honest. I would hate that. It would be a great twist, though. It would be a phenomenal twist, because we do see that figure who I just completely forgot about, but he was.
Yeah. Have we seen Patton Fain anywhere besides episode one? And then briefly when what's his face, like, glances in this, Perrin sees him in this episode.
So they've done a good job of hiding this. Obviously, there's a little bit in episode one that they give you that he's not fazed by this Trolloc attack, but you'd think that you don't see him until this episode, but he's in episode two, he's in episode six, no, five, and then now he's in this episode. So in episode two, he has an audio cue. So we meet him in episode one, he's whistling on his little peddler wagon, and episode two, when he wakes up in Shadar Logoth and is kind of like, then he wanders out. You hear the whistling again in basically the streets of Shadar Logoth. You see the little shadow that runs by on the wall. And then episode five, when Rand and Matt get to Tar Valon, he is watching them walk into the inn. He's in the procession of Loghain coming through the streets. He's like coming in and out of storefronts, basically. And then he is in the ways as well. Lan has a comment where he says, someone's following us, or something is following us. Moraine agrees. Lightning flashes, and it's Patton Fain just standing there behind them. So
this is just that's so crazy. The audio cues, fuck man, this already got rewatch value.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, what his deal is. Can he channel, or does, like, I mean, I'm inferring based on this information that he is shady and all over the place, that he's affiliated with the Dark One. He is suspect to be a Dark Friend, but like, can he channel? How can he activate the waypoints? Yeah, the waypoints
and waygates.
How can he track Lan without being fully detected? Or I guess he could be detected, but you know what I mean? Like, what makes this guy so special? Why is he so powerful?
Now that we have the Dragon Reborn out of the way, it's like, okay, now who the fuck is Patton Fain? Like, Dragon Reborn to Patton Fain, let's go.
That's such a funny mystery jump. Like, okay,
isn't it?
Right. Line's over now. I love that we're just like, now we're focusing on Patton Fain. It's the Patton Fain show.
Oh my god,
he was a good character too, because he kind of got highlighted in episode one. And it does kind of concern me about, you know, maybe he could find his way back to Matt, because they went out of their way to establish a rapport between Matt and Patton Fain in episode one, when they had, you know, he bought lanterns and he was just like, oh, I've been coming to you for the past 5 years, whatever. Like, they know each other, and now Matt is a little lost lamb.
They emphasize that really in the recaps of 1 to 6 for episodes 1 to 6 for episode 7, because out of nowhere, when I was even watching it, they just showed that flash clip of Matt walking up to Patton Fain and then him escaping. And then it's like, okay, that was really interesting. And that just made me think, like, okay, Matt must be searching for him, because maybe that's someone he can talk to that's not just the Aemon's Field 5, and he has a little potential friend, so maybe he's going to go searching him out. But what I find, now that I'm even talking, as like, what's really interesting is that we've heard that the wheel always will bring you to what your destiny is supposed to be, essentially. And so the fact that Matt might be potentially looking for Patton Fain, who is now with the Aemon's Field, quote, 4, we'll say. And it'll be interesting to see how he somehow gets incorporated back to this in season 2, because obviously we know that he won't be in the next episode because of whatever issues were going on. Hopefully everything with the actor is okay, but just really interested to see how Matt is going to approach this. And like you said, Betons, his relationship with Patton Fain, who now we are on the side of, he's a Dark Friend. It's like, okay, now Matt might be going down that Raymundo from Shaolin Showdown path of just darkness.
I appreciate that, Shaolin. That's, I believe, the second Shaolin Showdown reference you've brought to the Wheel of Time podcast.
So. I think it is. Yep.
Yeah. So big,
I think it's both
that.
Been in the same context, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, Raymundo, like, the concept of Shaolin Showdown is one of the four main characters will become like that apprentice or whatever the main guy in the next season. So that's it's very similar concept. Mm-hmm. But yes. Same.
Yeah, same. It's we've basically established that Patton Fain is King Sus, and I just think now the question is going to be, what level, you know, how deep is he? So our destination from the Waygate, as Betom said, was not initially Faldara, but we end up at Faldara. So Faldara gives us an introduction to people from the Borderlands, Borderlanders. These specifically are Shinarans. They don't tell us that yet, but that is who they are. And we meet Aglomar, who is the kind of the leader of the Shinarans.
first impressions of this new culture and group of people that we've met?
At first, I really, what's his name again? Sorry, it's, I got to get this
Aglemar.
Aglemar. I didn't write it in my notes, so now, of course, I'm going to just be struggling with it. But at first, of course, I was like, this guy's a fucking dick, because Moraine's coming. He's like, I got to tell you something. He's like, we don't need your help. And Moraine's like, no, like, you should probably hear what I'm going to say. Like, the Trollocs have been using the way gates to teleport to different areas of the world. So border that shit up and watch out for it. And he's like, you know what? I appreciate that. So at first he was a dick, but I think there's a little bit of more logic to him. I think he is definitely very much about protecting his people and his land. And he makes me kind of actually like him a little bit. I think he's a very interesting character. And his character design is very badass looking. So I would love to see this guy in battle with someone for sure. Definitely a little bit of a dick, but I think there's room to grow if he keeps being a mainstay character for me personally.
Yeah, I think he was just very prideful in his city, his culture, and what the city does, the service that they provide for the rest of the world in protecting. In his eyes, he protects everyone from the Blight, which is just seems to be pure evil from what they've shown us in this episode. Yeah.
The wheels were turning.
Yeah. But pride is the word that comes to mind when I think of him. Awesome character design. He mentioned, I forget exactly what he says, but he says, you'll always have an ally here so long as the Black Hawk flies. Is the Black Hawk like the mantle of the leader of Baldara?
Like, I thought that was him. Like, I thought it was him. I took it as him.
He has like feathers on his armor and stuff.
I think that's his like family sigil or standard, whatever you would like to call it. Yeah, the Shinarans are great. I love the Borderlanders. They're amazing. We've known for a little bit now that Lan is a Borderlander, so it was kind of inevitable that they were also going to be badass. I just one quick comment I will make that the guy with the eye patch who like greets Lan like an old friend, legend. That guy's a big fan favorite character.
Okay, cool. So,
yeah, we'll get more of that guy. He's definitely a beast.
Eye patches already raise your coolness like a little bit. So there's always a higher expectations if you have an eye patch on. Just an eye patch that gets you high all day.
It's like Kenpachi's, but in reverse. It just gets you high.
It just totally affects your ability to do anything.
I had to wear an eye patch in fifth grade.
You did have to do. I totally forgot about that.
I remember that.
Cranial nerve palsy, baby. Look it up.
B. Thompson has been through it.
Yeah, seriously.
Look at you now, though.
I do have. I do have a question. Is he the king of that people, or is he the king of the Borderlands?
No, I would say neither to those questions. He is just like the lord of Faldara. So Faldara is like a city within a kingdom, and then the Borderlands are made up of multiple kingdoms that border the Blight.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, so the Borderland meeting a bunch of different cultures that are similar in that like level of pride and that they fight against the Blight like that, but they do have some differences to them.
Okay.
I'm wondering how they interact with each other, if they're kind of like adversaries or if they're all fighting for the same cause, like we're team Borderlands against the Blight. But, you know, if you're that prideful in close proximity, they could butt heads.
I agree with that.
I thought Faldara as a city looked great. I loved like the cinematic shots of it where it's like kind of on a little bit of that like hill. And then like you see in the distance, we have kind of that gap in the mountains that leads into the Blight. Thought they nailed that.
It looked
that gap had a name, didn't it? Tarwin's Gap?
Yes, that is Tarwin's Gap.
Okay, cool.
Look at you, V-Tom's picking up. It reminded me a lot of like a Star Wars, like Luke Skywalker's home area kind of village.
Tatooine?
Yeah, Tatooine, yeah. I don't know. It was a very like, it felt like dust. Was it like a dust bowl kind of area? Like there wasn't a lot of green, right? Like I didn't.
No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, a lot of places close to the Blight like that, shit doesn't really grow. So.
That makes sense.
And also actually it's a strategic thing as well. They cut down a lot of the forest around the city. So things can't hide in a forest close to the walls.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we're on the subject of the Blight, what is the Blight? So is it like a living being? Like if you shoot fire at it, will it like all of it burn, or like what's going on with it? Like I understand that it's like encroaching and like kind of creeping everywhere, but like is there a way to stop it besides maybe killing the Dark One, I guess?
So essentially everything that's behind the Blight is
kind of the Dark One's HQ. So it's essentially kind of the border between normal, nice land and regular people, and then the Dark One's territories.
Right.
So then as the Dark One gets stronger and exerts more of an influence on the world, when Lan mentions his backstory a little bit, how he's the king of Malkir, Malkir has fallen to the Blight. But Malkir is actually north of Faldara, like through that gap almost. Clearly not there anymore because the Blight has swallowed it up. So it is a living kind of thing. I mean, it's a collection of living things that are attacking almost the regular land. But I wouldn't say there's a way to directly attack it. It's more of like an extension of the Dark One's power.
So it does seem weird, though, because the King of Faldara seemed prideful in that we've been fighting against the Blight, unless that's a catch-all term for everything that comes out of the Blight, like Trollocs, Fades, etc. But there has to be some sort of way. If it can just keep advancing with no resistance, then eventually Faldara is going to just get overrun, period. Like, that will happen. But yeah, he did not seem to be under that impression.
I think that's the combo of the pride.
Okay.
And also that is a concept. Yes, that kind of the idea that the Blight is almost unstoppable will end up being a plot point.
Gotcha.
They mentioned it, I think, a couple times, the Blight. And I was watching with my sister and she was like, well, the Blight, like, what's the Blight? So I was really glad that at the end of the episode, they give us that visual of it. I think that might have really helped explain it to people.
I do just kind of want to bring up one other character that we meet in that throne room of Faldara. I didn't catch her name, but she seemed to be like the princess. I guess we find out that she is Faldara's wisdom, but was also the king's younger sister.
Yeah. So her name is Lady Amalisa. That's Aglimar's sister. Maureen mentions that she has the serpent ring. She's been to the White Tower. There's kind of like a ceremonious thing where a lot of kingdoms or cities will send prominent nobles to the White Tower for like symbolic training. So she has a little bit of a connection with Aes Sedai and Moraine specifically.
So did Moraine say, she said something to the effect of, you weren't strong enough to join our ranks. So are there some women that can channel but just don't make the cut?
Like, if you recall in episode one, when Moraine and Nynaeve have that conversation about the old wisdom that raised Nynaeve,
right?
And Nynaeve is under the assumption that the White Tower turned her away because she was a peasant. But in reality, it's that she just wasn't strong enough in the power to be accepted. And then she obviously took that personal and then passes her bias down to Nynaeve. So that becomes a thing.
Gotcha.
Their whole mindset is that they won't raise you to Aes Sedai, but they'll teach you enough so basically you don't kill yourself.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of a heart. So were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
No, just she was an interesting character, and I kind of like that look into what a wisdom is and how they differentiate from a full-blown Aes Sedai. So it was good to highlight that character, I think.
I don't know if she has the title of wisdom. I think wisdom is more of a something that happens in their area of the world, unless the show changed that and I missed it. But she definitely plays a very prominent role in Faldara.
I could have sworn they referred to her as a wisdom, but if you didn't catch it, then I'm probably mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to watch the episode again before the deep dive, so if it does come up,
we'll call it out.
Kudos. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
Appreciate that.
I talked around it a little bit, but we find out more about Lan's backstory in some steamy scenes with Nynaeve. Ooh. So this has kind of been building up all season that they were going to get to this point. I personally loved it. I'm just curious if what our thoughts are that they've now taken this next step that they've been physically intimate.
I'm a big fan of the shipping of Nynaeve and Lan. I like that. I'm just a little bit more curious now, I guess, on the relationship between a warder and his Aes Sedai, because it feels like there maybe isn't a level of romance to it, but I guess just like the ultimate BFFs, like, because Lan and Moraine, we obviously have seen, like, they aren't physically intimate with each other, but Lan does do a lot of explaining that, you know, she gave me a reason to live and gave me someone to die for at the same time. So he was using words that weren't really romantic, but just more so like, I would follow this woman to the ends of the world. So I'm trying to decide if there can be romanticism between the two or if it can be just also platonic.
That's my biggest question is it commonplace for a warder to be romantically involved with her Aes Sedai? Because I don't think we've seen it yet. And
we know they bang. Some of them bang. We know that. Like,
do we?
Yeah, the green chick in episode four had like two or three warders because she's like, one just isn't enough for me. Like, I want to be satisfied, kind of. So.
Okay.
But again, that. So that kind of makes me feel a little like she again. So Kyle, maybe you can just take the reins here. But does it have to be plutonic? Does there have to be love in a sense? Or
I would say there's no rules to it. It's completely up to you.
Just a big trust maybe between the two.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's commonplace. It's definitely a thing that happens. I think that the real interesting wrinkle to this scenario is that Nynaeve is not his Aes Sedai, so he is not bonded to her. So that's kind of. The issue that's going on here is that Lan is bonded to Moraine, but Lan is in love with Nynaeve.
And we know that warders can change Aes Sedai. It's like very rare, right? But they can, if they want to, can change Aes Sedai.
Moraine does bring that concept up, yes.
Yes, okay.
Well, from everything we know about Lan, it doesn't necessarily tell us that he's in any position to want to jump ships like that. Maybe he would if their relationship escalates and he wants to protect her to that level, but he also respects the hell out of Moiraine. That much is obvious.
Kyle, was it last episode that I said that I thought Moraine was going to eventually, and maybe not this season, but like later down the line, die? I feel like I said that on podcasts in one of the episodes.
I believe you mentioned it in episode five.
Okay, I forget why I made that choice, but now that makes even more. Now I'm just only going to bring that up because my thoughts on that are only getting more confirmed because I think Moraine could potentially die, leaving Lan alone, but he has Nynaeve to potentially bond to and become the warder of. So that's kind of just fueling a little bit more of that theory that Moraine, I don't think, is going to be an end game character, let's say.
You've called that both Moraine and Swan are going to die.
I think Swan's definitely going to die. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Just want to clarify.
And then that depression from Swan dying is going to make Moraine just like more accepting of death. She's not going to kill herself, but like if she's in a battle, she'll just be like, okay, like if this is it, I at least get to be with Swan. And then boom, Lan's like, all right, Nynaeve, I'm all yours, baby. So that's what I think is going to happen.
While you brought up Swan, I want to say, because I wasn't on the episode, awesome character. Really liked that intro, showing her humble beginnings and then the stone cold leader that she turned into. That was just really well done, and I already have a lot of respect for the character.
Yeah, she is fantastic, and the casting A1. It's just everything about the character, they nailed that. But actually, very nice segue, speaking of Moraine and Swan, we talked a little bit about Min, who is the seer, the bartender that we meet. She gives Moraine that vision that the Amaryllis seat will be your downfall. I don't necessarily want to talk about that specifically. I just want to generally Min's character, her ability, and then what she says about the four characters that are in the inn with them.
I thought she was so cool. That's a great ability to have. It's very unique, even in terms of this world. It seems like that you don't see seers very often. I also like that she could care less about it too. And she was kind of giving Moiraine the workaround, trying to be like, I see this kind of whatever. And I guess I'll take the lead and define what she saw in each of our characters. So Perrin just had yellow eyes and blood down his chin. Rand was carrying a baby boy, or just a baby. And then our two girls, there was a white flame and a gold ring for the girls, but those were not specified who was who.
Oh,
and they were all connected with sparks that were trying to be enveloped by shadow.
Okay, I'm gonna do some mansplaining here on my thoughts for all this. So the Rand one was very interesting.
Very quickly, before you start,
go ahead.
Do you want to save this for the deep dive? Or do you
That's good.
Now?
That's actually a really good point. That's deep dive material.
Yeah.
Then for instant reaction purposes, I'll just say that now that I've thought about it a little bit more, I think the white flame has to be associated with Nynaeve because of what happened in episode four. Loghain literally says like a burning white sun or whatever that line is. So that's Nynaeve. And then the gold ring would be left for Egwene, I've already called it in multiple episodes. I think she's just going to become an Aes Sedai or whatever that, because we saw the gold ring on, what's her name? The sister
Lady Amalisa.
And so I don't know if Well, no, she's Gold Ring is going to be Aes Sedai. I just assume that Egwene's going to be an Aes Sedai. So that's who I'm going to characterize both those prophecies for. But really cool character in Min. Can she see future visions for everyone, or like, is it specific people? Like, that would just, if she could see it for everyone, that would just be terrible, because it's like, I look at this person, I see death, and then I look at that person, I see, like, crazy.
So it's not like a hard line. It's a little bit ambiguous, but it's mostly people that are very important to the wheel and what they call the pattern, which is kind of essentially destiny. So obviously our main characters of the television show mm-hmm. are important characters in the world, or people in the world, I guess you could say. So people like that have very strong, she has very strong viewings or visions. Aes Sedai obviously play big roles in people's lives. They have very strong viewings. Kings, queens, people like that, they have very strong viewings. Other people are usually not at all, or very, very like vague or unclear. She's a great character, though. People love that character. She's definitely a fan favorite. I'm a big Min fan, especially on my reread too. Like Dave had mentioned that the show with the Pat and Fane stuff is like, wow, that's so ripe for like a rewatch. Yes, this entire series is ripe for a rewatch. I'm rereading the books, and the reread might even be better than the initial read. So we have a lot of questions, I would say, going. It's funny because we got a lot of like big reveal this episode, but mm-hmm. now we're left with more questions almost going into episode 8 Definitely. Of what's going to happen next. So I think that's exciting. Mm-hmm. There's one part of the episode that we have to, I guess, throw into the instant reaction that I personally hate with every fiber of my being. But the whole love triangle between Egwene, Perrin, and Rand, that whole Ooh. Kind of argument that they have, not a fan of it. Don't think it was necessary. I guess I'm just curious of people with your virgin eyes, not knowing anything about the series, what was the thought kind of them basically saying that Perrin was in love with Egwene?
So my first question is that a thing in the books?
That's a bit of a tricky question. It's like very loosely hinted at that Perrin has a crush on Egwene. It's like okay. maybe two lines happen in book one, never touched again. It's just for me personally, and I'm a big Perrin guy, so I think like I'm protective of Perrin's character. And I think it paints him in a little bit of a bad light, because it's like, A, he's a little unfaithful to his wife that he murdered 6 episodes ago. And B, like he kind of seems almost like a bad friend in a way. So I'm personally not a fan.
It did feel a little forced. I'm not going to like say I hated it. It just kind of like we brushed on it. It seems like it's for the most part for right now, it's squashed. It could come back later, but it did. It was whatever, I guess. I didn't really care.
Yeah, I don't ship it either. I think it did a good job of just how that conversation would go. And as tensions were rising, like that was a good thing to make tensions come to a head. And after that, everybody can just storm off and then we can progress the plot. I don't ship it. It seemed unnecessary and a little bit forced. But at the same time, if this is where they squash it in this story and it really doesn't get touched on again, that would be fine with me. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think that's the end of it. Yeah. I hate it.
I will say, though, this scene, they also brought up Matt, and Egwene and Nynaeve were adamant. He left us. You know, he ditched us. He left us in the dust. He's a bad guy. And one, I love that Rain. I love that Rand just without blinking stuck up for him against his like true love, Egwene. He was just like, you never liked him. And if anybody knows about leaving us, it's you. I thought that was just such a dig. They keep coming back to that, like in Friends, they keep coming back to, we were on a break. But I love that because it is just always going to be such a burn against her. And her and Nynaeve were being annoying in that scene, because when you look at a character like Matt and kind of the home that he comes from, it's a broken home with his parents that are bad. You said that wasn't in the books, Kyle, but like he is the de facto good parent in that broken household. He is going to go into this mystical, fantastic journey with a lot more realism. And when Moiraine says, we're taking on the Dark One, only one of you is the DR, he would be like, I'm Matt. I like, yeah. These are my beginnings. Like, I'm not okay. Of the five of us, let's be honest, I am last in the pecking order of possible Dragon Reborns. I want nothing to do with this. I'm just being honest. And if I go through the void, I'm going to get dragged into it. This is my out. I don't fault him. I just don't. I'm a Matt fan. It's what I'm telling you guys.
I like it. I fuck with it.
I kind of like the character, and I'm rooting for him to do what's right, but I think he's going to have a really rocky path coming up.
to not end on such a sour note with
this. Yeah, thank you.
No, you're okay. You're okay. We'll move into our episode rating so we can bring a little positivity to the end of the episode. But I will say that there's been a couple things you guys have said about Matt's character this episode that I'm going to try to remember and write down that we'll look back on, and it's going to be a good time.
Cool, cool.
I think you guys have pegged Matt as the character pretty well. So I think that's honestly a good nod to the show as well. So episode ratings, I will go last because people care about my opinion the least. So the two of you can duke it out for whoever wants to go first.
E-Tom's the newbie. Welcome. Give us your rating.
Damn. Okay. So these are always tough, especially since you want to give yourself room for growth. And if we're going to have, go ahead, Dave, if you want to chime in.
No, I just also wanted to say, just you could also maybe give us like top three episodes also with your rating as well, because you're a new face to the podcast. And we also would like to hear what your favorite episodes have been as well.
If I'm being honest, they kind of blend together with one ends and one begins. I really liked the Tom Marilyn episode where they highlighted him in the village and the introduction of the Dark Friends. That would have been episode two, I think, maybe three. Okay, episode three. And I just remember the last two episodes being really, really good. It's been all rise since episode three. Let's put it that way. But yeah. I also really enjoyed episode one, the latter half with the Trolloc attack. I really love this series so far. But it's been all rise since episode three, I guess. That said, these are always tough because you want to give yourself room for growth. And we're going to have possibly 10 seasons of this. I hope this isn't the highest of highs. And I know that the fandom, it's being received very, very well. But I'm going to give it an 8.5, 8.5 out of 10. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10, actually, because while we get the Dragon Reborn reveal and a lot of really good exposition world building that doesn't really feel forced, like not a lot actually happens in this episode. The intro was a 10 out of 10. I'll say that. I loved that reveal, but that's all it was. It was a reveal of information. It wasn't like a long stretch of good watching material. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Shit, I forgot to mention this. We're going to sidetrack a little bit. I just want to say that I feel like Moraine is really going off the deep end after having contact with the Black Wind. Sorry, I know.
I just had to throw that in there.
I just want people to know that I'm on the money with my predictions. But Moraine is going off the deep end. She's looking a little pale when her and Rand are about to go into the Blight. So I'm interested to see what happens in episode 8 with her going off the deep end a little bit.
So going off that, Dave, I do want to say maybe that has something to do with the fact that she just severed or... what did he say? Blinded her bond to Lan.
So she masked it. So it's still there. Masked it's it. Just that it's not at the level where they can feel each other's feelings and kind of sense where each other are.
Okay. Gotcha.
All right. But that being said, this episode,
Don't think too hard about it. Reaction one. And I think that it's important to, when we do the episode ratings, to think about it, I think, in the context of the season itself. Don't put so much pressure on yourself.
I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. That's what I gave episode 4. These two are, I have to just say, they're tied for my favorite episodes. I can't pick one over the other. I really love this episode. I just, my screaming, like when we find out Rand was the Dragon Reborn, I'm just like, holy shit, no fucking way. I just really liked it. I'll give it a 9 out of 10. It's tied with episode 4 as my favorite so far.
What was episode 4 again?
That was like the big battle. That was Loghain's like... moment.
Gotcha.
That was when Loghain breaks
out. You guys loved Loghain. You guys loved Loghain.
But yeah, I'll give it a 9 out of 10. This was just... the Wheel of Time keeps impressing me, and that one point, like, it could be a 10 out of 10 episode a couple years down the line, but just like Kyle said, in this moment, as we've been comparing these season episodes, I'll compare it to 4, which I think is a 9 out of 10, and saving that 10 out of 10 hopefully for 8. We'll see.
I have been going back and forth in my head between an 8.5 and a 9. There's just so many good parts to this episode. Like B-Tom said, the opening scene, the blood snow stuff, is one of my favorite sequences of television I feel like I've watched in a long time. The Dragon Reborn reveal with everything with the arrows and him having the flashbacks and hitting the bullseye. Like, I honestly, I'll say it, like I shed a tear a little bit because it's like, that's my boy Rand. And we're finally, now it's out there in the world. Like, everyone knows that he's the Dragon Reborn. And I know that like what this really means for him. So it was very emotional for me, but I'm going to settle in, just fire off the hip, 8.5.
Nice. How many episodes are going to be in season 1?
This is the next one's the finale.
That's it.
Hey, okay. That's kind of what I figured.
Trying to hop back in for that 8 reaction.
I mean, man, if I got an invite, you know.
I mean, we're all Binge Town, of course. It's yeah. Open invite. And I think 8 would be a good one to have 5 of us just because we can all gush over it. And yeah.
Yeah. The wheel weaves as the wheel wills.
Mm-hmm.
We will see what happens. All right. That is all she wrote. Episode 7, Instant Reaction in the books. B-Toms, it was a pleasure. I hope you had fun. I hope everyone
happy to be here.
Your perspective. Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, I love having the non-book readers on the show. So I hope that I hope you had a blast because I really like your perspective on a lot of things. I think you, honestly speaking with you, changed my perspective on the episode. I think I like some things a little more now. So kudos to you. Uh-huh. And everyone out there, if you liked B-Toms, if you liked the three of us, obviously, you could follow us, Instagram, Twitter, BingeTownTV.com. A website, BingeTownTV.com. Oh, .com's not in our handles. I do that often, but don't type in .com when you're searching us on social media. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you. First of all, please throw us a comment to keep the discussion going. We love chatting with you guys in the comments. Like, subscribe, and that's all I got.
Let's go.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.